This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views from Absinthe to Zinfandel. Just Imbibers.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to our podcast. It's the Drink Talking. We are returning for another week of drinks information, pouring it into your ears, telling you things you don't know. We'll be drinking, we'll be suggesting things you should be drinking. We hope you enjoy it. I am Tom Sandham. I'm the spirits expert, and I am joined, as ever, by my two friends, I guess you could call you friends, right. Work peers,
sidekicks.
Yeah, you could be the shit sidekicks. who have we got? We've got Ben McFarland, beer expert. Hello, Ben.
All right, Tom. How are you doing? All right.
I'm okay. Yes, I'm very well. And we've got Sam Capon, the wine expert. Hello, Sam.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very well.
Good. Everyone's well. I'm
average.
All right, I've got a dicky tummy.
You don't look
so
great, I've
used
got
to say.
Say.
I mean, it could mean something slightly different now. Mm. Because we have been in Mexico, haven't we, Ben?
We have.
We were humming that all the way around Mexico, Sam.
And on the plane back again?
Think, well, yeah, but every time we went into a restaurant, we would walk in going... And we had to sort of backtrack a bit, thinking, is it racist?
I think it's lazy national stereotyping rather than particularly racist. I don't think anyone would be offended. I wouldn't know.
And enthusiasm. It's exciting.
It was always sung with the right intentions.
And it might have made you look like a bit of a twat.
Yeah, but to be fair, a lot of the places we went into did have mariachi brands, including really traditional family restaurants. It is a bit of a thing. It's not just for the tourists. They hover around tables and play music for people while they eat for a fee.
Yeah.
And naturally, we batted them away at every opportunity. You can enjoy the music from a distance.
Well, one of the funniest things I saw over there was there were these two guys who clearly they're like on a business trip. They were just having lunch together and they didn't seem particularly, you know, like good mates. And they were surrounded by these mariachis who were serenading them with love songs. And they
Did they look super awkward?
No. Do you know what? No, they lapped it up.
They just kept on.
Well, it gave them time. They meant they didn't have to talk to each other.
I think there was six of them playing this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't speak Spanish, so I don't know what the lyrics are. But, you know, all these love songs are very emotional, I think. And it just looked...
hilarious.
It just looked weird.
Well, I had an exciting week, so I went to Marrakesh.
Nice.
And it's really nice. Just myself and a friend and the two children. It was great.
Why did your husband not go?
Is everything all right?
Yeah.
All right. Was it better with or without him? Is a holiday better?
You know what? That's a really interesting question. I've always felt very, very, very strongly that he is my preferred and perfect travel companion.
Okay.
I do love girl trips and I do take advantage of doing that and I love it. And they are very different. But having said that, you have a different experience when you go with a girl than you go with a partner. we were very lazy. We both just wanted to sit by the pool. I know Ed might have wanted to have done a bit more stuff.
Right.
So for 4 days, because it was really perfect, it was then like, well, I wouldn't want to change anything because it was really fun. Oh, but yeah, you know, it was great. Yeah.
Okay.
Any hunky waiters?
No.
Oh, well, you should try Mexico.
Slide the leg. Oh,
they're all over Mexico.
I was just thinking. But all men. All I mean, not that men. I'd have found a hunky waitress, but I mean, obviously...
hunky waitress.
It's an Islamic country.
Some people
and
do.
There's I think one waitress...
What, hunky?
Yeah, some people might prefer like a hunky waitress.
A hunky waitress. Yeah. What, like a
sort
of built. Well-built
yeah,
muscles.
I think we had
a... Yeah, like a tobogganist. It's Winter Olympics at the moment. Have you seen?
They're
built.
Yeah.
That can be quite sexy for some people.
Yeah, I'm not saying. I would not describe a waitress as hunky. Even if she was well built, I'd just go
chunky.
In the modern
chunky
age,
rather than hunky.
In the modern age,
but no,
women
no
can
waiters.
Be hunky too.
I can't believe I've been pulled up for suggesting that the
no
hunky,
hunky
would be
waitress.
Misplaced when you're describing a lady.
A
hunky Moroccan waitress.
No, there weren't any.
There weren't any. Okay. Mexico was amazing, and we'll be talking about it a lot over the next three podcasts.
I bet you will.
Brace yourself. Brace yourself, people, to hear a lot about Mexico. So it is me today. I'm going to do a spit or swallow. I'm going to start with my swallow, though, which is not tequila. It's whiskey. Specifically, it's something called Whiskey Me. And it is whiskey delivered to you
by the postman.
By the postman, yes. It's a new, I would describe it as innovative, method of getting whiskey into people's hands. And this company, which has been set up by two drinks legends, Tristan Stevenson and Tom Ask, who are pioneers of the bar world. In fact, they run a bar called Black Rock, which is just opposite where we are recording this at the moment. It's a whiskey bar, fantastic whiskey bar. Recently picked up another award this week. And Tom and Tristan are really great guys. Tristan's written a number of books. I would always suggest that listeners, the books about drink that you should be buying are the books that we have written. My name is Tom Sandham and I'm with Ben McFarland, and you can find our names with a Google search and an Amazon search. Please buy our books. But once you've got our books, then try Tristan's as well, because they're very good. He mixes industry knowledge with consumer friendly information. He's written some great books as well. So these are good guys, and Tom really knows his stuff as well. And they've launched this company, Whiskey Me. So what it is essentially great whiskies delivered through your door for £7 a month. You get 5 cl worth of booze, but they're great whiskies that you wouldn't necessarily want to spend money
a lot of money on
an entire bottle.
Mm.
So we're talking about bottles that might retail for around £80, which is the one we're going to be tasting today.
So do you get one 5 cl sample a month?
You get a different dram, they describe it as, every month, and it will be something that's potentially new to you. It's delivered through the post. And on the website, you get lots of information about it. And it's very cool packaging. The packaging is a bit like a Capri Sun.
Or for anyone with children, it looks just like a kid's
one of those,
pouch.
One of the food pouches that you serve
but
up
a
for
mini
your babies.
One.
What are they called?
Like Ella's
Kitchen.
Ella's Kitchen.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
It looks like an Ella's Kitchen pouch.
Yeah.
But about a quarter of the size. It's really dinky.
Yeah, it is.
And actually, if you shake it,
there is definitely liquid.
There's definitely liquid in it.
There you go.
They've thought of everything.
They have. And the website is worth a look anyway. They've got drones, which they've used to film the distilleries that they select each month. And there are lots of added benefits for members. And as the membership of this subscription base grows, they start to give you other freebies and interesting add-ons. Now,
great present for a whiskey lover.
It's a brilliant present. Now, it's caused a ripple of controversy within the industry.
Because
as you might expect, the whiskey geek, not dissimilar to the
beer craft, geek.
Beer the
geek,
old guard as well.
The
I
old
assume.
Guard, well, yeah. I think one of the problems with whiskey is it has had this sense of tradition, and it's sometimes difficult to break the shackles of it. But actually, it needs to.
But what are the criticisms of it?
Well,
as long as it's filled
it's
properly,
a bit like putting wine in a bag, isn't it? It's this idea that whiskey should be arriving in a certain format, and that there are traditional bottles. Putting it in a Capri Sun bag is the only criticism you could level at that is if it impairs the quality
that's
of the
just
flavor.
I was going to say, if in terms of getting out of the cask into this, if somehow it has been, you know, impaired. Allowed to spoil or impaired, then that's an issue. And also, it's really cute, can I just say, on this they've got three little fruit pictures.
Yeah.
Presumably they're meant to be key flavours.
Indicators.
See, that's awesome. I've got to say, when I first saw this, I thought it looked a bit shite. In the space of 5 minutes, I'm totally... change my opinion.
Well, there you go. And that's why it's a swallow. We are going to swallow some on air, ooh, so we'll be able to tell you what we think of the whiskey. But their argument is it doesn't impair the flavour in any way.
And if it doesn't, so. I think this is brilliant. I think, and going back to a podcast we did ages ago when you were talking about the price of pints, mm-hmm, and the really expensive pints. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think increasingly that if you can get really good gear in front of people and they're only having to pay a little bit for it... Mm. I think that's brilliant. Spirits expert, what do you think?
That is fantastic. We're drinking the Inchmirin 18-year-old, and that does retail for £80 a bottle if you get it off thewhiskeyexchange.com. It's 46% ABV, so you might want to add a little bit of water.
That's pokey.
Pokey whiskey. Yes, but it comes from Loch Lomond. As I say, they'll give you a little bit of information on there. I think there's no impairment there. I mean, I did say to Tristan, I won't be subscribing just purely because the amount of stuff that comes through our litter box, we haven't got a space to put it, and my wife is genuinely cheesed off with the amount of booze that comes through the door. So I won't be subscribing, but if I was a whiskey fan, I'm absolutely on board with it. I don't think I'd pay...
So how much was it? £7.50 a month?
£7 a month.
£7 a month.
Yeah, go onto their website.
That's what Netflix is, isn't it?
Well, there you go.
Roughly.
I'd get both.
Then you've got your life sorted.
I've just started watching a new Netflix series.
Okay.
Which I've got to say is hilarious.
What is it called?
It's called Designated Survivor. Have you heard of it?
No.
Do you know what a designated survivor is?
I have heard of this. No. This is the presidential one,
isn't it? So designated survivor is someone who, when the president and Congress get together, is put in a separate building and away from Congress in case everyone gets basically blown up,
right,
or, you know, assassinated. So the inevitable happens and you've got this designated survivor
who is Kiefer Sutherland.
Right. So if you like 24 or you like a bit of West Wing or anything like that, it's really cheesy, but the premise is pretty ridiculous, gripped.
Okay,
it's really good.
Okay,
if you like a cheesy kind of political thriller,
watch that and have some of this.
So exactly.
If you want to know, listeners, the website, it's whiskey-me.com. Love
it.
Good stuff. Well done, Tristan. Well done, Tom.
And I just want to add, there's always going to be people who criticise things like this.
It's change, Ben, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if it means people get to drink different things, it makes it affordable. It's very arrogant of people to say...
It has to come in a glass bottle.
It has to come out. It's just nonsense.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, don't buy it.
Yeah.
I think it's
Bugger off.
Yeah.
Right, we're going to get on to my spit now. And this is Mexico-related, so a series of Mexico-loving. So we were in Mexico. The great guys at Cask Marketing took us there. They're brilliant chaps. They look after lots of different booze. Silent Pool Gin is one of theirs that they help market and shout about. So go and check out what they've got on their roster. Brilliant booze.
Yep.
One of the things they've got is Ocho Tequila. And that was the reason we were in Mexico. So we got to travel around Mexico and learn more about it. But one of the big things in the industry at the moment is an agave shortage. The agave is the plant that makes the tequila. And they are suffering at the moment from an agave shortage. Ben's rolling up his sleeves.
Ooh.
Oh, we're going to get onto that. Yes, Ben's showing me.
Is that an agave injury?
It's not. I'll tell you what, the agave is an amazing plant, and there's lots of great things about it. The Aztecs used it for making shoes, for shelter. They squeezed the juices out, let them naturally ferment, and they gave them their pulque, their alcoholic drink. It's also been known to have properties as an anti-inflammatory. So the agave is used in medicine as well. Now, what's interesting about that is the fact that it had the opposite effect on Ben. When we were farming them, we were picking them up. And Ben picked one up and walked around with it for the purposes of videoing to look like a big, hard himador, the men who pick the agaves. We were warned, although Ben didn't get this information.
Right, can I just explain, okay? The guy who took us there gathered everyone around, apart from me, and said, listen, when these things are harvested... they're very acidic and you shouldn't really pick them up.
No, what he said was some people, a small amount of people, have a reaction.
A sensitivity.
The cool ones.
No.
If you're
no,
especially cool,
the weak.
You're susceptible to it.
The weak.
And then they're big. They're really heavy things. And they're like they're about 25 kilos. And it's kind of like a peeled pear kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool because they're heavy. And I was like, yeah. And I was like world's strongest man. I even got above my head. It's pretty cool.
Well, these guys lift like 200 of these things a day. Ben did one for 10 minutes. It wasn't impressive, Ben. I wouldn't describe you as world's strongest man. What happened was, though, he got a rash on his arm.
Really bad one.
Looks like really aggressive herpes on
the
his arm.
The next morning, I had this rash and no one had mentioned the agave thing. So I came down to breakfast. I was
thinking, oh my God, I'm dying.
Fuck, what was that? What
Stop
was that? And I hadn't.
Fuck.
No. We've said it several times, so we might as well. Then I came down to breakfast and I thought, oh gosh. That looks bad. And it wasn't until someone pointed out the agave. And then I was like, okay, that's fine. But it wouldn't go away. It was really bad.
It's still there.
It's okay now.
It's dried up and it's still looking a bit scabby.
Anyway, that's what it did to Ben. But generally speaking, they're very popular ingredients. But there's a shortage of them at the moment.
Is your spit...
The shortage is bad and is worth spitting about, but my spit is actually agave syrup. Now, are you familiar with agave syrup? That surprises me because in the world of health foods, agave syrup.
Oh, of course, sweetening agent. Yeah, I have a bottle at home.
You do?
Yeah.
Why do you have it?
Because
it's a nice, healthier, I suppose,
alternative. Yeah, I bought it as an alternative to refined sugar. My son's has pancakes and he has maple syrup.
Right.
But you've never touched it, have you?
It's unopened.
Well, you bought it for the reasons that it's marketed itself very cleverly as a healthy alternative. But it is not necessarily a healthy alternative. One of the reasons there's an agave shortage is because the boom in agave syrups, you can cultivate the agave, you can pick them earlier than you would have to when they're picked for tequila. So it takes about 6 or 7 years for them to reach maturity, but you can pick them around 2 or 3 years for the agave syrup. And it's had an impact. We're having met the tequila producers out there. We were firsthand hearing how the syrups and the syrup producers are taking from the yield.
The syrups were in that bigger kind of production that they'd impact on the tequila.
Well, yeah, it's good, but it has been.
Well, it has.
Yeah.
Well, it's a massive part. Anything like that is part of this whole quite right anti-refined sugar thing. Does mean that people are looking for alternative sweetening agents.
Well, they do.
Leave the plants alone.
Agave syrup is gluten-free, which is also suitable for vegan diets. Now, we've seen a lot of people claiming to be vegans.
But whilst also selfishly eating a chicken.
I read something the other day that had to make an apology because I'd had a recipe in there which they'd said was vegan, but it had included honey.
Well, yeah,
which
honey's another
bee.
One.
Honey, and so honey's not vegan.
But it's another one that people think is really... It's just they're different types of sugar. Agave has...
I'm being ignorant here.
Yeah. So vegan is a byproduct of an animal. I mean, I suggest bee is not an animal, it's an insect.
But also they do that naturally, don't they?
It's a living thing. I don't know.
They
know.
They do it naturally anyway.
They printed an apology for the fact they'd put honey in a vegan recipe.
Hives, but
I don't know.
Fuck them, they're only bees.
Wow. Big no-no. Bees save the planet.
Yeah, I know. That's good. They're keeping them alive, aren't they?
I don't know. It's a bit like cows, isn't it? Why would we have them if we didn't milk them and butcher them?
If we didn't milk them and butcher them, they'd be everywhere. Can you imagine?
Have you watched Cowspiracy?
Shops.
I haven't. I want to.
Couldn't get into
pubs. Okay, that's a shit anecdote, Sam. I'm going to call you on that. Have you seen... I haven't. I really want to. I mean, that applies to a lot of things.
What, the Cowspiracy? Yeah. What are they up to?
Cowspiracy.
But what are they doing? What are the cows?
Basically, it's saying that... I think it's something along the lines of cows produce so much...
methane.
And
milk.
Use up so much...
Grass.
Something about CO2. They're basically really bad for the planet.
Oh, so they're not...
Pull the other one.
Apparently it's causing global warming. If it wasn't for them, it'd be freezing.
And I need to get a jersey. Do you know what's interesting about this round of gags?
We've used them before,
listeners. But if you're new to the show, hey, there's some new comedy. Anyway, agave nectar. Low glycemic index, so that's why people like
it.
But it's largely made of fructose, and fructose is currently in the firing line because it's seen as a nice alternative. It is a good alternative if you take it directly from fruits and indeed from the agave plant itself. If you chew on a bit of agave, it's lovely, rich in sugar, but you're getting the fibre. If you take the fibre out and you commercially extract it from the agaves or from fruits and concentrate it into a sweet, it has a big metabolic price to pay on your body. And it's been linked to lots of bad things. So people are eating this assuming that they're dodging the bullets of sugar, when in fact they're not at all. They just have a different type of sugar. There's a guy called Dr. Johnny Bowden, who's known as the nutrition mythbuster, and I should name him because he was one of my sources of information on the whole agave syrup ruse. He was saying that agave nectar syrup is a triumph of marketing over science. True, it has a low glycemic index, but so does gasoline. Does that mean it's good for you?
No.
Only if you're a car.
Johnny, yeah. It doesn't. You're right. I would not drink gasoline. So
I think we did when we were in Mexico.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll get on to that in another podcast. The mezcal we were drinking was loopy juice. So stop eating it. Agave's brilliant.
Leave it for tequila,
it's important,
basically,
in terms of climate change. A lot of scientists looking at the agave plant now as a genetic map for other plants, because it can survive in semi-arid conditions. They're trying to genetically map other crops so that we can save the planet. Agave is a beautiful thing. Stop using it on your Weetabix.
The worst people in this whole thing are people who buy it and then don't even open it.
Just have it in the cupboard.
What sort of twat would do that?
So that's my spit and that's my swallow. I hope you enjoyed that, listeners. And we are going to be moving on now. I think after all that talk of bad sugar and rubbish things to put in your body, we're going to have a tasting of some wine, Sam.
We are indeed.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to It's the Drink Talking.
So it's me on wine duty this week, and we have got two Chenin Blancs.
Chenin Blanc.
Chenin Blanc. Chenin Blanc. Okay, tell us about Chenin.
Okay, so Chenin is a white grape that is predominantly found in two places, France in the Loire and in South Africa, where it is known as Steen. Now, in the last year, I would say I've drunk more Chenin in the last year than I have done in my whole life put together, because I've realised it's the most amazing food wine.
Ah.
It's really, really good. It's got really high acid, so it's really, really fresh. And then I think we've got a Vouvray from the Loire.
Okay, yeah.
Vouvray.
Which is dry.
Easy to say when you've had a bottle.
Yeah.
A Vouvray.
Which is dry. It can be sweet. And then we've got a one from South Africa, which is a bit more oaky and a bit more sort of structured. But yeah, just think of them as fantastic food wines.
Can I just butt in here? What are its kind of near alternatives? Where does it sit? Is it like a
Chablis? That's an interesting question. So on my wine flavour tree,
yes,
it's down the bottom in orchard fruits. Also sitting in orchard fruits are the likes of Chablis. So it's crisp, crunchy, quite tight, quite fresh. Certainly the ones in France.
Right.
When you get to the more New World wines.
Totally different.
Where they've also got a warmer climate and the grapes get sort of more sugar in them again. Then also the sugar turns to alcohol and you get a more broad, sort of full-bodied wine. And they tend to put a bit more oak in them.
Okay.
Right.
But Chenin, you can get lots of really cheap Chenin. Very cheap, white, South African blends will predominantly have a lot of Chenin in. But they can make some fantastic ones at the higher end. And these ones are both from Majestic, The first one, the Vouvray, is, let me check, $10.49 as part of a mix six, and the Bellingham is $10.99 as part of a mix six. Good gear for you two.
That's a bit expensive.
That's a birthday. That's an anniversary.
I've never spent that much money on a bottle of wine.
Really?
But I think, and this is something to probably cover in a spit or a swallow another time.
Yeah.
But I went to a Majestic the other day. This time Remy didn't. My three-year-old didn't smash the place up.
Yeah.
But I just noticed, and I don't know whether it's a Brexit thing or part of their new ownership, but everything seemed quite steep.
Expensive.
I mean, they were nice wines that I got, but it was quite tricky walking around not seeing a bottle of wine for less than a tenner.
Go to Co-op, mate.
Yeah, I know. I realise I might be fishing in rather ambitious waters.
Get what you deserve in Majestic.
But I just wondered whether that was something that the industry has noticed recently, that things are going up. I mean, I just read an article in The Guardian. Get me.
Ooh,
second one in a fortnight.
Did you read it online?
Yeah, I'm not paying for it.
Did you make your contribution?
Yeah, I did.
Like they ask.
No.
But they're begging us.
No.
Give us money.
Back off, lefties. I've got no money.
I've read it now. I'm not paying for it.
And they were just saying that everyone from suppliers to staff to food, everything's gone up.
The exchange rate is crippling stuff.
Absolutely nailing us.
It's an interesting one. I'd suggest it's probably a little early to see that effect on the high street because people are really, really cagey about moving price points because they're so important. And they generally will always push that back to the producer and the supplier.
Yeah.
So I would suggest at this point in time, that is not Brexit related. I think prices will have to go up, without a doubt. I think it's a little bit early. But I think Majestic is one of the slightly more expensive high street retailers.
I still think it's good value for money. I mean, you're still getting good wines.
Mm.
There should be an award for wines under £6. Like across the board.
Get all
the supermarkets.
Cheap wines.
The Plonk Gong.
Can we try these expensive wines?
I'm
trying it now. I just wanted to finish
Ben,
up
can
on
I the borrow you? Because you're the one with the French mother.
Oh, yeah. Je m'appelle.
It's a Vouvray, and Ben's going to say it in his French accent.
The producer's called Bernard Fouquier. Fuck it. And it's the Domaine des Aubusières. And it's 2016, which is 2-0.
Says.
And it's Cuvée de Perruche.
Love it.
There we go. Is that right? Do you want me to read the address out and the barcode?
No, that's great.
I thought your French accent would be better than that.
It's all right.
It's all right.
I liked it. It's better than mine. So each parcel of the grapes is hand-picked, vinified, and then fermentation takes place partly in oak barrels and partly in old glass-lined vats cut into the rock.
Qu'est-ce que c'est? That sounds fancy. Glass casks in the rocks. What?
Apparently
what was that
so.
Bit?
Like, maybe they just shorten space and they're in the winery.
Yeah, in caves.
There's some rock. Yes,
this is
you.
Phenomenal.
Oh, do you like it?
I love this. This is really nice. This is almost worth the price.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a lovely wine.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's quite a pale colour, quite tight, high acid, apples.
Baked apples all over.
And a little bit of honey.
Yeah.
And maybe a bit of nuts.
But still dry, still
very dry,
clean. And
can you see why this would be a good food wine?
Yeah,
it'd be great as
an
aperitif.
I can see why this is going to go with my Twiglets.
Yeah.
Tonight I'm having that bottle.
You have to fight me for it. It's going to go well with my chicken.
God damn it. Listeners, we normally do end up with a bit of stuff to share around, but I can see Sam is taking that one home. That is
Ben just threatened to lick all round a screw cap, which might make it less appealing. But can you see this is a really well-made wine? You
that
do get
lovely.
What you paid for. So, yes, it's a Vouvray from
good.
The Loire, made from the Chenin grape. Great food wine.
Do you know
good
what it
value.
Says to go on the back? It says here...
Fish?
It goes... Well, yeah, swordfish.
Chicken.
roast chicken. Basically, they've taken your suggestions and poshed them up. So instead of chicken, they said roast quail.
Oh.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And then they swordfish with capers, which is...
Okay.
Chicken. Which is not chicken.
So Majestic
does it say highly baked wheat with yeast extract topping?
Yeah.
Which is effectively Twiglets.
They say salmon on croûte in the Majestic.
And they say Chinese food as well, which is
really?
A sweeping generalisation.
Now we can have a debate on whether
that
is
racist. No.
It's just a tune.
It's just something that you hear when you go around China.
Yeah,
probably.
I've never been to China.
While everyone's kung fu fighting.
Yeah,
oh, I see. Okay. So, also, the little interesting factoid
really?
That I've got.
Let's see.
Is that Chenin is related to Sauvignon.
There we go. Okay, that's why I
Isn't
like it. I mean, I do really like
it. They're half siblings.
Aha!
They share a parent. DNA analysis has shown that Chenin has a parent offspring relationship with the Jura grape Sauvignon, which isn't Sauvignon, and often people
that's
will
Portuguese.
Then correct the typing. No, I think it's French. And
Jura Valley?
No, Jura.
J-U-R-A.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Jura.
Like
they produce
Scottish,
very funky wines. And it shows a sibling relationship with Sauvignon. So I think that both their parents are
like it.
Sauvignon.
Like it. Right. That's good.
Anyway, so that's the first wine. Absolutely delicious.
For
Ben,
the purposes
that's
of listeners,
not acceptable.
Just for the purposes of listeners, Ben has just poured his remaining dregs back into the bottle.
Who's
in Mexico,
in
Mexico, as well as herpes of the arm, Ben got the shits.
Yep.
So.
That's now your bloody wine, isn't it? Is that why you've done
who's
it?
Who's taking
that
home?
Is,
oh,
that
no,
is
I'm sorry.
Below
look,
the belt.
That is,
literally,
really is.
Literally
that's where all
belt.
The problems are, right below the belt.
What
that's
a,
naughty.
What a
sneaky man.
Anyway, moving swiftly on. Can I pull
like
the rest
my
of, I'm going to share pull a bit there. Okay, so the next
out of a
wine.
Cocktail.
Oh, right.
Now,
I'll give
wine,
you tequila bat
I think
project.
This wine I have shown on Saturday Kitchen before.
Oh.
And it's the Bellingham Old Vine Chenin Blanc, and it's absolutely delicious. You can get this from Majestic, and I think you could also get it from Tesco's. It's a 2016 vintage. Now, this is a slightly different kettle of fish because you've got the Chenin, but where the one before was kind of tight and honey and sort of baked apple, and it had this lovely texture on the finish, so that I would suggest that the oak the Vouvray was in was old oak, so it didn't add any spice. It just added some sort of texture and phenolics, whereas this one is more obvious oak and spice.
Yeah.
Which one do you prefer?
The first one, because I think that's a bit, it is quite almost vanilla-y.
I was about to say, it's very vanilla-y.
It's got too much of the wood influence on it. That's starting to
move, yeah.
You know, moving towards like dessert wine territory.
But they're very, and also look at the colour. The colour on this Bellingham, the South African one.
Yeah,
it's
I think
very
it's
golden colour.
Yeah.
But well, this is more expensive. Right. This is $10.99, part of the mix
50p six. More.
The Vouvray is $10.49. Mm. But then this will be, the oak is expensive. Oak barrels
right.
are expensive.
Right.
So that will be why this is more expensive. Also, old vines. Do you know anything about old vines?
No, the only thing I know about the vines that surprised me was what I saw in Bordeaux, where they'd taken all the vines
yeah.
from California
oh, yeah.
after phylloxera. I was staggered that so and much of the vineyards
them.
Are actually, no, they're rerouted with California. So all of this French wine is actually made from American grapes. It just seems quite
no,
strange.
No,
I know,
no,
it's
no,
a bit
no,
of
yeah.
a stretch.
Old vine is simply vines that are old. With the
wow.
Don't get
they
technical.
They are just too technical in
but,
French wine, aren't they?
But what it means is the roots have obviously had time to go really far down
right.
into the soil. And the further down into the soil the roots go, the more you're picking up really kind of
minerality.
Complex minerals and whatnot from the soil. And also, not just that, but old vines produce less fruit. So you've got the quality-quantity thing going on. So old vines generally produce a smaller quantity of better quality fruit.
There we go.
So it's more expensive again because your yields are lower, but your quality is higher. They're quite different, aren't they?
They are.
The French
they
one
I
and,
like both
and,
of them.
And I love both of them. They're really, really good.
I like both of them, but I'd definitely go with the first one.
It's and shows why it's worth spending a tenner on a bottle of wine.
No, no. You haven't convinced me of that, and you never will. Well, thank you very much, Sam. That was brilliant. I really enjoyed those wines, and I will continue to drink them as I am listening in awe to Ben's legend of liquor, which is what we have next. Okay, listeners, it's the time in the podcast where we look with reverence towards someone who's living or dead, past or present. Our legend of liquor, who have you got today, Ben?
Well, I hate to trample all over your intro there, but it's not actually a person. It's, it's a thing.
Not another bloody horse.
It's not a horse. Well, it's either a beer or more specifically a shape.
A shape.
A shape.
A shape of beer.
No.
Okay.
It's a beer, but it's renowned for being associated with a certain shape, a red triangle.
Ah. So it's a brand shape.
It's a brand shape, but it's not just any old brand shape. It's the Bass Red Triangle. It's an iconic red triangle, which is very famous historically, seen in lots of different things and was seen all over the world. Now, this is Bass beer. Brewed historically in Burton. There was a time, we've talked about this before, when India Pale Ales were exported all over the world. Britain was the greatest brewing nation in the world. They had this big empire and they were exporting IPA all over the world. Bass was one of these beers and it had this red triangle on the label. And there were lots of people who were being rather naughty and flagrantly festooning their bottles with the famous red triangle. And so Bass sought to protect itself from these poorer pass-offs. And on New Year's Day in 1876, one of their employees was the first in line to take advantage of the Trademark Registration Act. Oh. And Bass & Co. Pale Ale became the UK's trademark number one.
No way!
So they're the first one. This trademark, a British invention,
yeah.
It's ours.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either. That's.
So they managed to get a foothold in countries all over the world. By the 1880s, the Bass Brewery was a business sprawled over more than 145 acres, churning out more than a million barrels of Bass beer a year and employing in excess of 2,500 workers. Now, given that there was no TV, radio or internet back then, its worldwide renown was really quite remarkable. This is an extract from Fortunes Made in Business, published in 1884. Now, brace yourself, this is going to take about 15 minutes. It is no extravagant assertion to say that throughout the world there is no name more familiar than that of Bass. There is no geometrical figure so well known as the Vermilion Triangle. It is as familiar to the eye as Her Majesty's visage on the postage stamps. It would indeed be a difficult task to say in what part of the earth that vivid triangle does not gladden the heart of man.
I mean, I like a triangle, but
that's a bit
verbose description.
He doesn't stop there. The word Bass is known in places where such names to conjure with as Beaconsfield. I don't know who he is. Beaconsfield?
I know it's a
Bright,
place.
Tennyson and Dickens would be unintelligible sounds. To what corner of the habitable world has not Bass penetrated? Stop it.
Yeah.
He has circumnavigated the world more completely than Captain Cook. The sign of the Vermilion Triangle is sure evidence of civilization. Now, not only that...
Okay.
It is.
It's just a shape, people.
Right. It appears in Edward Manet's 1882 painting Bar at the Folies Bergère. Mm. That wasn't just because they loved Bass. It was apparently it's to stick two fingers up to the Germans because there was a lot of anti-German sentiment.
Was it a red... Because it wasn't just like... The pyramids might have been an inspiration.
Yeah, the pyramids were more...
probably a bit more iconic as the sort of triangular shape. Are you sure he wasn't inspired by... pyramids, right?
It's not just a triangle. He's not 4 years old. I'd had a triangle.
Well, yeah, you just start with the shapes, don't you? You've got to draw a perfect circle, Ben.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'd argue is a better shape
for
circumnavigating the globe, for sure. A square's probably better. It's got four sides, not three.
Triangles are quite good. Yeah, they stand up on their own. Circles don't do that.
Well, squares do. I said squares better because it's got four sides. Beat a square. Go.
Rhomboid.
No, well, yeah, I mean, a rhomboid looks like it might fall over, but yes, you're right. Pentagon, also the heartland of world
but okay,
domination.
This particular triangle, a red one, Pablo Picasso... also drew it, but during his cubist period.
Why didn't you call it the triangle period? Because squares are better.
Well, because the triangle...
I don't think you can link Pablo Picasso's triangles to the Bass triangle.
No, it's actual bottles of Bass.
That's what he's trying to say. That it's
just naming people who drew triangles.
but how do they know that Picasso was influenced specifically by the Bass triangle?
Because he fucking drew it. That's why.
Where's your evidence?
There was loads of nods to the Bass Triangle in his work.
You don't see much Bass around these days,
well,
do you?
Well, I'm coming on to that, Tom. But I haven't told you who else was inspired. James Joyce.
Oh.
He's another clever clog who became transfixed by the famous trademark in Ulysses, which is a fucking difficult book to read.
We tried to read it for the show and then didn't.
He wrote this. During the past 4 minutes or thereabouts, he had been staring hard at a certain amount of number one Bass bottled by Messrs. Bass & Co. at Burton-on-Trent, which happened to be situated along amongst a lot of others right opposite to where... his scarlet appearance.
Even he can't be bothered to read.
So, right, listen. Okay.
Boring.
Bass Pale Ale, it was drunk by the following people. Edward the VII, Edgar Allan Poe, Buffalo Bill drank it as well, and it also inspired Napoleon Bonaparte to set up a similar brewery in Paris. But apparently he abandoned the idea when he was told that the Paris brewery could not recreate the inimitable sulfuric Burton Snatch.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's taken us this long to get onto the Burton
Snatch.
The Burton Snatch is an aroma... that comes off the beer in very specific to Burton upon Trent because of its high mineral water and its also sulfuric edge to the beer that it's kind of particular to the region. So
it's quite an odd smell. It's eggy, isn't
the fact,
it?
Yeah, the fact it's called the Burton Snatch is amusing in itself.
So, it is. Well done, Napoleon, for trying to recreate.
When the Titanic sank, there were 500 cases of Bass Pale Ale. So in terms of historic importance, I don't think there's another brand that can match it. But you don't see it anymore because it was bought by AB InBev, who have done very little with it. They realised that it was a brand that they couldn't work with, and they took it out of Burton.
I'll tell you what, Ben, now's the time. What they need, really, though, is some sort of UK-wide comedy theatre project. Two experts who could talk about all of this in a show, which is
and
happening.
And bring it back to the
breathe
different demographic.
Back into it.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
Sam.
Do
yeah.
it.
And that red triangle could be festooned all over Britain.
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about the most important coloured shapes in the drinks industry, which is, I know, something that worries people all over the world, the Bass Red Triangle has got to be front of mind.
That is brilliant, Ben. I have to say, we've had people living and dead, and we've had a horse, and now we've had
a shape.
So if you are putting this on with your children around, there's something for everyone in this podcast.
Remarkable, well
done, remarkable achievement. Thank you very much for that. And thank you, listeners, for staying tuned and keeping listening while we talk about shapes.
Hello?
I mean, God knows that can't be easy. But that was a fantastic podcast. Lots for everyone in that one. And we will be back again next week with another. In the meantime, we should probably say that Ben and I, as the Thinking Drinkers, will be appearing in live shows around the UK. We've got March the 17th in the Cotswolds.
Chipping Norton.
Chipping Norton will be performing there. And April the 14th in London's Underbelly on the South Bank. Now, that is a 400-seater, which is massive, and we do need to fill it. So please come and see us and sample some of our booze there. Sam, are you going to be on the telly anytime soon?
No, but I will be in Edinburgh with the Wine Gang also on the 14th of April.
How brilliant. Yeah. Okay.
We've also got a sessions at the Museum of Comedy all about gods on the 15th of March. Yes, it is the 15th
yes,
of March.
Yes, it is the 15th of March. Well done, Ben.
Thanks.
So please come and see us and tune in again next week when we'll have more irreverent but educational booze information. Thank you for listening. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye. Bye.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.